Welcome to Story Comic Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 352. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're excited to have with us the acclaimed writer of comics, screenplays, and the 8-time honorable mention winner from the Writers of the Future contest, Becca Lee Gardner. Becca.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, how are you doing?
I am good. Yeah, it's starting to be spring, so I'm happy about that, right?
Right.
Can't be too mad.
And it's really exciting that we finally get to meet and talk, because we've exchanged emails for the last 2 years or so, basically.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've done scheduling for Todd Fonenstock, and it was one of those situations that were one of our email exchanges. I'm like, I found out that you actually are a writer too, as a honorable mention winner, and you're a published author of science fiction and fantasy. And Becca, you got to come on the show. And here we are.
I know, you kind of had to twist my arm. I love this show. I'm a little nervous. So that's the truth.
And so you just recently had a book published that is available now, called Mindstorm, which is a science fiction one. But you also have a book that you accidentally figured out that now you have to make it a series, Men the Mighty as well?
Yes. So the story about that is, this was a bedtime story I told my kids during the pandemic, just to get them to stay in their beds for a minute. And I told it to them night after night. And then I was like, wow, this is fun. This little dragon who can transform into big dragons to help save them. That's fun. And then probably 8 months later, I was in between writing big serious projects and needed a little bit of a palate cleanser. And I wrote this little book and put it away, like I didn't expect it to get published at all. Several months after that, I was actually on the phone with Todd Fonenstock, and we were talking about my first convention, my first Comic-Con. I was tabling, and what should I have on the table? And he was like, are there any other projects that you could put on the table, like we could publish? And I was like, I don't think so. And then out of the blue, my oldest son came running out. I think he was like 11 at the time. And he came running to me and he was like, Todd, make her, publish Men the Mighty. And I was like, yeah, stop. Like, I'm on the phone. but basically Todd and my oldest conspired, and they were like, you need to publish this book. And so I kept making excuses. I was like, I don't have an editor right now or a cover artist. And I've not even shown this book to anyone. Like, not even my kids have read this book. I just wrote it. And Todd was like, you can make excuses or you can make it happen. And I was like, okay. So we made it happen. We found wonderful artist and an editor. And the problem is that Men saves 7 dragons, which wasn't a problem when I was just writing it and putting it away. But now we have a lot of avid little readers that love this series, and they're like, how is she going to save all the dragons? So I'm currently working on books 2 and 3, and they're set to publish the beginning of June. So we're going to have books 2 and 3, and then hopefully we have the rest of the series by the end of the year. We're thinking about some Kickstarter plans maybe, so to get the rest of the series done. It's the year of the dragon, so we're trying to make Men happen in the year of the dragon.
And so Men the Mighty, what kind of world does this take place in?
It's a fantasy world. It focuses on Min. She's the smallest dragon in her forest. She's got to fight off crows to keep her breakfast, but she knows she's powerful because she's a dragon, right? And no matter what size she is, she's powerful. And that's really great because this big Leviathan dragon, this elemental dragon in the background of this illustration, has forgotten that he's a dragon. So essentially, when these elemental dragons share their magic, they also share their minds with the warlocks. And these human warlocks have taken the magic and their memories. So now these big, giant dragons are just magical batteries, essentially, for whatever the warlocks want to use them for. And right now, that's world domination, right? But Min's going to stop that. She's going to save the world by finding each one of these big dragons and reminding them of who they are. So the world is all it's all dragons, right? The main character is a dragon, but she's tiny. And we have humans in here who some have used magic for you know, their own greedy purposes. And then there's, of course, characters who want to use magic for good. And, you know, so it's fun. It's a really fun story. And the main little dragon Min is based off of my youngest daughter, who is the feistiest, most powerful tiny girl. So she's the inspiration for sure. And she brags to all her friends that she has a dragon based off of her. So that's fun.
This is the story that you kind of started telling during COVID, correct? So in a way, this is almost like your COVID project, right?
I guess so. On accident. Yeah. Absolutely. Probably one of the best things that came out of COVID for my family, for sure.
Did you kind of ad-lib it as you're telling the story, or did you type it out and then basically recite it during like the bedtime story times?
Yeah, the bedtime story times, because my kids' attention span's not great, or that the truth is that my energy level's not great at bedtime story time, you know? I was just telling them little brief snippets of Min turning into big dragons and fighting. And just the idea of that was really captivating for them. But when I went to write the story, it just came. Like, it was the concept was in the bedtime story, but the actual book of it was different. So when I finished the book and actually read it to the kids, they're like, oh my gosh, this is how it's all started. You know, they got to see the world building that my subconscious, I guess, was building before I knew what I was doing. So
what would you say is like the age range of Min the Mighty then?
Oh, that's a fun question, because I sort of built it for, you know, second grade and up. So like second to sixth grade is sort of a sweet spot, but I've had precocious, you know, younger kids reading it. And I've had like 16-year-olds read it that love it. And I've had adults love dragons that love it, that have read it and loved it. So really, like, if you love dragons, you'll be into it, but definitely in that, you know, grade school age is right where we're hitting.
How much did you get in depth into like the actual world building aspect of it before you kind of decided on how the entire story goes?
Oh yeah, I didn't world. I just, all of it was on the fly. All of it was on the fly. And I mean, it sort of all sort of like blossoms out of this character. I knew that I wanted her to interact with elemental dragons, and that's why I made such a long list of ones she needs to save, which is why it's a 7-book series, right? But it all just kind of just flowed out of it. And I, in other projects earlier in my career, I got stuck in world building, because it's sort of like a nice little cocoon you can wrap yourself into, and you can control everything, and it's not scary. You don't have to show anyone, and you can just sort of like layer and layer and layer on different things that are cool and insulary. But the truth is that that's not, I mean, that didn't propel my storytelling forward. It just sort of built me into this cocoon where I felt safe. And the more I tell stories, the more I write, the more I realize that safety is not really where I need to be. Like, if I'm not scared about the story I'm writing, not scared that I can pull it off, then I'm not writing the right story. You know, I have to be pushing myself forward. And so I don't do a lot of world building ahead of time. Because that's one of the things that I discover along the way. It blossoms out of the characters and what they need. And then I can go back as I edit and feather in the things that I want to make the world more robust. But as I'm writing, it's all into the dark. It's terrifying.
And you mentioned the 7 elemental dragons. And I know when I think about it, classically speaking, there's 4 elements. So what did you decide on being the 7 elements?
So we have earth as the first dragon, and then it will be sky and water, and then fire and ice, and then dark and light.
Ooh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And the light dragon is the king, and he's the one who sort of started this whole quest and is enslaved by the worst of the worst. Right. So that's the, like, that's the ultimate one that they're going to save for sure.
And that's going to be book 7 then.
Yeah. Yep, that's book 7. And we're already well into our way on book 3, so we're going to get this done.
And each book is going to be around 100, 150 pages, or?
Yeah, yep, about 20,000 words each. So they're nice and short, they're nice and quick. I have some reluctant readers in my house, and so I love to be able to give kids story, right, that they can access. I remember the moment where I could access story that I wanted to read. And for me, it was Star Wars extended universe novels in fifth grade. And I wasn't like I wasn't necessarily a struggling reader, but in that one grade, my reading level jumped from like fifth grade to 12th grade because I finally was like, oh, this is something I want to read. And I read, right? But I remember the moment where I was like, I can read a Star Wars novel. Like the movies are not done. Like I could access it and I could open the book and just be in that world whenever I wanted to. Like that escapism and that wonder was just like at my fingertips. And I remember that. And so when I'm writing these stories, it's one of the things that I think about. It's like, how do I make it so that this book doesn't look intimidating? So it's nice and short and the chapters are accessible and short. And the language is clear, but not like I'm not talking down. Like I love when I'm reading this out loud to my youngest as I'm writing it, and she gets into the world. And I love when she asks me what a new word is. And I love anyway. So it's been such a fun adventure. I never expected to be a children's book author. Like I wasn't in my plan at all. But I'll tell you that some of the most satisfying moments I've had as an author is having kids come back and with questions and with the light in their eyes, like, when's book two coming out? You know, or what is this? And they start asking questions, we start talking dragons, or, you know, it's kids are just, they're just so pure in their enthusiasm for a book, and to be able to offer that like gateway into wonder is just, it's such a gift. Like I'm so honored to be able to do that in just a small way.
And so how did you have to tweak your style from writing like adult sci-fi and adult fantasy as compared to writing a children's book? How did your writing style adjust to that?
So that's a great question, because right now I'm writing two books at the same time. I'm writing the next books in the Min series, and then I'm also writing a space opera. And so I definitely have to split the times in the day when I'm writing it, because it is slightly different styles. But I find in writing kids' books that just honesty and clarity are king. So I just love being honest. I just love being honest about the feelings and the world and what's going on. Like it just feels pure. And this is a sort of an abstract way of answering your question, but it just feels like I'm not trying to juggle five different things in a scene. I'm not doing that. I'm just being clear and honest about the story and doing that the best I can. And in adult writing, I get to like use, you know, more scent, like layers and layers of nuance and all of that, right? And callbacks to other things and others, you know, like a twitch of an eyebrow means a lot in adult fiction, right? You're like, oh my gosh, like there, that's a big emotion. But in my kids' books, it's like a twitch of an eyebrow. And my daughter's like, what does that mean? Like what, you know, we've kind of been trained to like look for things in adult fiction that kids are not quite picking up on. So it just has to be sort of honest and bold and big in some ways, but also like, it can be kind of quiet too. And like some of my daughter's favorite chapters of the books that I've been writing lately are the ones where, you know, Min is just flying with the earth dragon, right? Like and does it advance the plot? Yes. Like at the end it does, but like the rule of cool is pretty big for the kids too. So there's like, there's a lot of stylistic things we get to do, but I'm around kids all the time. I've got three little ones. And so I speak this language. So it's easy to flip the switch a little bit, and also really hard, both.
What lessons have you learned from writing adult prose that you've been able to implement in your children's book writing then?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite bits of advice, it's actually from Todd Fonestock, is be clear, not clever. And I think that is true in adult fiction as well as it is true in any other fiction, right? Anytime you're trying hard to be clever, you're sort of adding static to the scene. Because I mean, artists, we're smarter than we think we are, right? Our ideas are more interesting than we think they are. They seem normal to us because we have brains that do this stuff and connect things like this, right? But when we try to punch it up and like make it bigger than it is, it just gets confusing and staticky, right? But when we try to just be clear about what we're doing and what the scene is and what these characters are and what the story is, then our cleverness comes through anyway, and it comes through without that static. And it's, but especially for kids, like if you're if you're trying to be clever in kids writing, they're just going to put it down. Like, they just don't have any patience for it, right? They just want story, and that's pure. I love that.
Right. And so you write fantasy, you write science fiction. Which one do you seem to gravitate towards if you have a theme of a protagonist, an abstract idea of a protagonist or a story or a theme? Do you tend to lean more towards sci-fi or fantasy to tell that story?
That's a good question. It just depends on the mood. Like, it's pretty random. Right now I'm skewing sci-fi, because I wrote, aside from Min, because obviously that's fantasy and I'm writing that, I wrote Worldbreaker, which is my like debut full-length epic fantasy novel that came out in December. And that's, that was my first full-length like fantasy novel. And I loved it. And I loved working in that world and all of those things. But I feel like once I finish like a big project in one of the genres, then I flip over to the other. So I just sort of bounce between. Like I said, Star Wars was one of my big, inspirations as a writer and a reader. So space opera feels like home. But then sometimes I get ideas. I'm like, oh gosh, this needs dragons. Like, this just needs dragons. And I'm gonna play. So at this point in my career, I don't know if I'm going to settle in either one. I think I'm just going to keep playing in both until I find my stride, you know?
Talk to us a little bit about Mindstorm.
Yeah. Mindstorm came out a little while ago. It's a novella. So it's shorter, than my other books. It's essentially like if Han Solo and Lieutenant Ripley from Aliens had a daughter who grew up to fight demons, that would be the story, right? So it's got plenty of guns and action and a little bit of some Japanese mythology in there. And it was my first sort of leap into professional publishing. I got to work with Corwin Zahn, who's Timothy Zahn's son. He was my editor, and that was a wonderful experience. And just love that story. It's ongoing, so we need to finish up that story. But like, it was one of those stories where it's like, I've always wanted to see this kind of character, this like, you know, badass, smart female character fighting inner demons that don't stay inner for very long. And anyway, it was a really, really fun story. So yeah.
And you mentioned this is actually part of a larger series.
Yes. Yes. So there's two more in that. That's actually been outlined and ready to go. Just got to wait for, you know, the others to settle down a little bit, stop yelling. It's like having like a, you know, a Jedi council in your head, but they're all yelling. Like, it's just the loudest Jedi gets the book written. Like, but they're all yelling all the time. It's a crazy place. So,
which is, it's interesting because you bring up Star Wars a couple times. Because Star Wars is almost the perfect marriage between fantasy and science fiction as well.
Right. Right. I see. The sci-fi book I'm working on now is definitely like more space fantasy than it is science fiction. And that's where I would skew for sure. I do love the hardcore science fiction books. The Martian was phenomenal. I would rather play in fantasy and with laser swords than learn more science stuffs. So that's where
Yeah, and that's a good point. You see that when you're writing in science fiction, you have to actually study to see how things work.
Sometimes, like, yeah, sometimes I have smart friends that I ask questions to, so that my studying is abbreviated, you know, so they can point me in the right directions. But, like I said, I blend enough fantasy into my sci-fi that, I want it to have internal like consistency, right? And this is, I get on this like soapbox a little with horror movies, which I love to watch. But like, if there needs to be like monster rules, and if the monster breaks its own rules, or you don't understand the monster's rules, then there's no tension, you know? And I think that any sort of genre fiction has that. Like, it has to have that internal glue. If it makes sense in this world, it needs to keep making sense in this world. It needs to be consistent and reliable. And then we can suspend our disbelief, because this is a different planet. It's a different world. Like, we can hand wave a lot of things away if it's internally consistent. So that's what I strive for. I'm not going for perfectly accurate science, but like, internal consistency is what I lean toward.
Right. And you bring up that good point too, that, and also the same thing about with fantasy is that you have to have some specific rules in place ahead of time as well for fantasy.
Right. Yeah. Magic systems and all that. Brandon Sanderson does a good job of talking about like how to set up a magic system that's pretty consistent and has rules and limitations and prices and costs and all that. So it's definitely something to consider. Like the days of Gandalf's magic are limited, right? Like Gandalf's magic's not well defined, and we just were like, cool, but you know, we're just like, yay, he can do stuff, and then he can't do stuff. We don't like, there's no real explanation for that. But Gandalf, like the whole plot doesn't necessarily hinge on him. Like he does come through in some key moments, but like he's not the POV character, so we don't. Like maybe the burden of proof is a little less for Gandalf, but I think readers now expect more explanation. Like, I guess we've all been raised on NCIS and forensic science shows or something. We're all just like want the nitty gritties of how the world works.
And how does that work also too with like creating rules when it comes to writing children's books as well?
Right. There are specific things like that. You know, for Min, it's like, this is how she saves a dragon. And this is why she's saving a dragon. Those are rules I can't break. Oddly enough, hypocritically enough, I like in Min, I like this idea that dragons, their magic's intuitive. So sometimes Min will just like do something. She'll just like put her nose against this bleeding human and heal it, right? And before then she'd never done something like that, but this time she just knew that she could. And I did that pretty intentionally, because I'm breaking, you know, the fantasy rules here. I did that intentionally because I love the idea of kids discovering their own magic, right? Like as a kid, you don't know your possibilities. They're not defined. They're not listed. They're not clearly anything, right? But you have that feeling inside that you could do more, that you could maybe do this. And I wanted Min to have that same feeling like, oh yeah, I could do this. And I did, because that's how dragon magic works. And so I do play with that line a lot in Min the Mighty.
And so you mentioned earlier, you have books 2 and 3 already outlined. Are you planning on releasing them, like say another book once a year now? Or how does that work for Min the Mighty?
Yeah, so Min books 2 and 3 will come out in June, early June. We don't have a release date yet, but I get to talk art with my artist this week, so I'm really excited. So that's what's going to happen for books 2 and 3, and then I'm going to just keep writing the books all year, and we're hoping to maybe use a Kickstarter to fund the rest of the series, so books 4, 5, 6, 7, and. That Kickstarter will launch in September, and then we'll be able to like fund all of the books, and the whole series will be out by December for anyone who doesn't, you know, fund the Kickstarter. So we're trying to get the whole series out this year. Wow. Yeah. And part of it, I mean, it's the year of the dragon, so I think that's cool. But the other part is that my kids are little right now. My kids are ages 13, 10, and 8. And, they are so excited about this story. And I know because I've been a parent long enough that if I blink, they're going to be teenagers and gone, right? They're just going to be gone. And so I was like, you know what, in this moment where I can read the books to my kids as I write the stories, or I can share with them and they're all excited about this, I'm just going to really push hard to get it done. And it is pushing hard because like I said, I'm not stopping writing my adult fiction books. I'm just doing it in tandem, and it breaks my brain some days. Some days, like, it's like, there's no quiet space in my mind anymore. Like that quiet space has another book in it. So it's a lot, but I'm really excited to finish the series. So.
Right. Perfect. That's on. So Beck, if people want to learn more about your work, where's the best place they could go to?
So I've got a Facebook author page, which is great. I will post a lot of updates there. I've got my website too. If you're interested in joining the update list, where I will send like a monthly newsletter and let you know when the next books come out, all that stuff, you can email me at BeccaLeeGardner@gmail.com or find me on my website too. So yeah, those are the best places. And there's going to be a lot of exciting stuff, not just the Min series. We've got, you know, more of that sci-fi series coming out, but those books should be done this year too. So it's a lot of writing and a lot
Perfect.
of fun. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. Any final comments?
I will say that to give like a little like plug for some of the wonderful people that I've worked with in the last year. It's been a dream come true. We talked about Star Wars. It's been a dream come true to write in the Eldritch Legacy world. That's what Worldbreaker is set in. And I always wanted to write for Star Wars. I was like, oh my gosh, I want to write for Star Wars. It's gonna be so great. And then when Eldritch Legacy became an opportunity for me, I realized that this is Star Wars. It's like ground level Star Wars, where I get to work with all of these authors that are collaborating in a shared universe with the same magic system, same history, same mythos, and I get to just take a little piece of it and build my own characters and my own conflicts and my own monsters. And it literally was a dream come true. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity. The founders are Todd Fonestock, Marie Whitaker, Quincy J. Allen, and Mark Stallings. And so just like a massive thank you to them for bringing me into that world and letting me like just have a dream come true. So and of course Todd Fonestock, who was the continent lead writer and my mentor through that process. So like it's been such a wild journey and such a wonderful time to be brushing shoulders with those people. So yeah.
Listen, Becca, you're gonna have to come back on when your Kickstarter launches. We'd love to talk to you more about When the
Yeah,
Mighty Do.
yes. This was the book that was supposed to stay small and grew large, just like me. So,
Oh, perfect. All right, thank you.
Yeah.
When I was overseas in the Peace Corps, and I read all the books I was supposed to read in like high school and college. I read when I was actually had the time sitting in a mud hut and just reading all day. So
Right.
I'm proud to say that I actually read War and Peace. So
Oh,
I read that.
geesh, while in a mud hut. That seems
Yeah.
like the only way I would read War and Peace.
I know. It
I'm an
was.
English major. I graduated with an English literature degree and I still didn't read War and Peace. I'm like, nah.
No.